Hey, superstars, welcome back to another episode of Word Up with Danny Katz. Today, it is my great pleasure and joy to be joined by Molly Engelhart. Molly Engelhart is the, I guess, genius and face behind what was Sage Vegan Bistro. And Sage just made a big move. This is a restaurant chain. Well, I say chain, it's not like a corporate thing, but Molly has created a number of restaurants in Los Angeles. And they recently made the move to serving regenerative meat. Molly has a regenerative farm in Texas. She is a vocal and well-spoken advocate for regenerative agriculture and regenerative meat, even though she herself is vegetarian. So it was a really big move for this kind of established Los Angeles vegan restaurant empire to make the decision to bring in regenerative meat. And it has been met with a buttload of controversy and pushback. Which I am holding the vision of this podcast helping to smooth out. We all know that sometimes people who identify as vegans can kind of have a little chip on their shoulder around their vegan identity. And it seems like a lot of that has come up. But what Molly explains to us in today's juicy conversation is how regenerative agriculture is really what's best, is really most aligned with nature, and vegan agriculture ultimately isn't what's best for the animals themselves, for us humans, ingesting, you know, the vegan vegetarian products, et cetera, et cetera. So I was super excited to have Molly on. I was a big Sage, I was a fan of Sage back in LA. I was actually a fan of Kind Cream, which was Molly's first raw vegan ice cream store. It was in the Valley, and I would ride my pink, I had a hot pink scooter, and I would ride my scooter over the hill to the Valley to get her yummy ice cream. And then I was such a fan of Sage when it opened, and I was thrilled to reconnect with Molly this year at the Confluence event, which was hosted on Molly's farm. It's called Sovereignty Ranch, and she hosts groups there, and she has a restaurant, and she, you know, leads tours to help people understand what regenerative agriculture entails, how the animals are treated, how it all works together. So I'm super excited for today's conversation, and I am inviting you to make yourself a nice cup of tea, a nice refreshing beverage, buckle up, and prepare to enjoy my conversation with Molly Engelhart. Molly, hi, it's great to see you.
Good to see you too. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for saying yes. I don't think I know anyone who has as much on their plate as you seem to have on your plate. So I was over the moon when you said that yes, you would carve out the time for this.
Oh, I'm so excited that so many people are inviting me and so many people are committed to telling this story because, you know, we're sort of teetering on the edge of survival right now, made a big, jumped off of a cliff with not really a way to get down. And so I'm honored by anybody that's willing to amplify what we're up to.
Yeah, awesome. So we're going to get into the whole regenerative farming, this like giant transformation that you and your whole family have made together. But I want to start at the beginning because I was an early Kind Cream devotee. I mean, it was amazing when you guys opened up your little vegan ice cream shop and like everyone in LA was so excited to have like a high vibe, healthy place for us to meet. So I'd love to know like what was the inspiration for that and then moving into the whole Sage empire.
So I started with the raw vegan ice cream, which is a pretty narrow market. And I'm glad that you were part of that high vibe, interested in a raw vegan ice cream product. And, you know, my dad was raw for a lot of years and Woody Harrelson was raw. And though, like Woody's kind of like a uncle kind of figure. His wife is best friends with my mom's identical twin sister. So these are like, we're adults in my life, my dad and him. And so I was being kind and making raw vegan ice cream. And everybody was like, oh, this is so good. You should make a business out of it. And I did make a business out of it. And it wasn't like enough people that are committed to raw vegan ice cream. And so then we expanded into doing the front part of the Echo Park restaurant, which the restaurant at that time was owned by somebody else. And we just opened this front little kind of ice cream, kind cream in the front of Sage Vegan Bistro. And then the guys that ran that restaurant were not vegan, were not committed to food quality. And I realized that I had kind of attached my horse to this wagon that wasn't morally or ethically aligned. And so I made them an offer like, why don't you let me be your partner and I'll buy into the restaurant and I can help kind of navigate some of the stuff that is nuanced maybe for you because you're not a vegan. I mean, not nuanced. It doesn't occur as nuanced to me, but it might be nuanced because you guys are not vegans. Like you can't say you have a vegan croissant and then buy it at Costco. And so as soon as I did that, they went on vacation to Palestine for 6 weeks. And so all of a sudden I was like running this restaurant and my two ice cream shops and kind of had no idea, you know, what I was doing. I hadn't ever run a restaurant. I was a pot grower who was like, oh, I'm gonna make an ice cream business. And then you know, all of a sudden I'm running a restaurant and I remember the server crying and saying someone was mean to her. And I was like, I don't think I'm your boss. Like you work for the restaurant. I just have the ice cream shop. I'm contemplating taking over part of it. And so it was a complicated time. And then they were gone for 6 weeks right after I gave them the down payment for buying into the restaurant portion. And the chef quits. And then the sous chef also quit separately. So the chef threw a bottle of soy milk at the chef's the sous the chef threw a bottle of soy milk at the sous chef's head. The sous chef quit, gone, and then the chef quits. And I'm like, guys are in Palestine. I'm trying to call them, can't call us before there's like Facebook calling to other countries or whatever. And so I call the sous chef and I'm like, Benga, keep water. I need you to come in the restaurant, please. And he said no. And I'm basically, I convince him to come back if the other chef is not there. And me and that sous chef served that same other chef's menu until Monday to run out of all the food. And I put a whole new menu that was mine, all my recipes, and the sous chef helped me get it so we could, you know, make it fast and come out of the kitchen correctly and all of those things. And so that happened pretty quickly after they left. And by the time they got back, we were having more business, more covers, more sales. The food was coming out of the kitchen better. And so that's how I ended up being the owner and the chef of Sage Vegan Bistro. I didn't pick that name. It was all kind of inherited. And then when I started to open the second one, they didn't want anything to do with it. And they made me buy them fully out. They thought it was a silly, silly thing for me to open the next location in Culver City, which was my most successful location ever. And I mean, we closed it during the pandemic because to renew the lease, I would have had to sign a personal guarantee for 10 years, and I wasn't going to do that. But by far, our most successful location, and they thought it was a bad idea, so they didn't. So I had to buy them out, and that is how I became the owner. And the sous chef that was at the time 19 when this story of getting the stuff thrown at his head is my current husband. He was 23 when we actually when we whatever. But so it was 4 years later.
I love that story. I love the family legacy empire that you guys are building together. It's so inspiring. I remember when the Culver City restaurant opened, it was so beautiful. It was so odd in LA. Like a couple places were doing vegan food or raw food, but they weren't necessarily attuned to like a vibe, a place where you would want to have
No, no vibe. It was like sprouts and avocado and green walls, like some kind of green that nobody would ever on purpose pick on the walls.
Yeah, so you were like totally ahead of the game in creating something that was actually beautiful and elegant and sophisticated on top of the yummy food. And I'm intrigued by our crossover because I was in the LA high vibe health scene like from what like back when in 2000 when we would like drive to San Diego to get raw olive oil from David Wolf's like li little backroom situation there because you couldn't even find a flax cracker in LA. And what I find interesting is none of us are raw anymore. None of us are vegan anymore. We've all jumped on the meat train like super organically of our own accord. I left LA in 2019. I just got this really strong gut hit in October of 2019. My gut said, get out quickly. Take your favorite things. It's going down. You're never coming back. Leave. And when I left LA, and then all the crazy stuff happened. Like, I ended up losing so many friends and so many colleagues, and like, didn't realize how many people weren't walking their talk or whatnot. So, I loved that, like, you're totally on the same page, that you totally get what's going on. And not only have you yourself, made the shift out of veganism, but like, that you guys are now serving meat and like, promoting regenerative farming and like it's such a completely different paradigm. So I'd love to know like your journey to go from vegan into meat is good, actually regenerative agriculture is where we need to be going.
Yeah, so I in 2013 was going about my business running a successful vegan restaurants in Los Angeles. I was pregnant, living in a, living in a gated community at a pool, like drove a hybrid, used reusable bags when I went to the market, ordered non-dairy milk in my latte and felt like, I'm doing it. I'm doing the right thing, And I listened to this Graham Saight TED talk that completely turned everything on its head. And that I realized there was a solution to if excess carbon, at the time it wasn't for me, and if excess carbon is a problem, but at the time it was like excess carbon is an existential threat and there's a solution and nobody's talking about it. And methane is far worse than carbon and nobody's talking about it except for with cow farts. But the real methane problem was food waste. And so I realized as I'm using my cloth bags and thinking I'm making a difference, I'm just dumping kale stalks and the bottoms of cauliflowers, like so much food waste into the landfill. And I thought, wow, I'm maybe not part of the solution. Maybe I'm part of the problem. And so I decided I was going to talk to every guest that came in the restaurant and tell them they should buy a farm and I will bring all the food waste to the farm and it's going to be so amazing. And we're going to compost all the food and food and coop the food in the loop and all this stuff. And it would be like the Clippers coach or some celebrity that I've just came to their table and told them that this is. And then I realized none of them are going to buy a farm and do regenerative farming. And I'm so inspired about it. So it's me. I'm the one that we've been waiting for. And so I set out to have a vegan regenerative farm. I'm going to have rescued animals. The animals are going to be rescued. They're going to be cared for, but they're going to regenerate the soil. And nothing is ever going to die on this rescued farm. And I have this idea that that's how it's going to be. And we get the farm. It took some years. It wasn't, that was 2013. I heard the podcast or the TED talk. I didn't actually get onto land until the first month of 2018 because a series of circumstances, but mostly that my husband was undocumented and you can't get a loan over like 350,000 without a social security number, or at the time that was the situation. And so,
Can I ask you real quick, were you a vegan because you were born into a vegan family, or was there a point where you made a conscious choice like this is the right paradigm for me because of XYZ?
I just thought it was the right and humane thing to do. I was raised in that context, and I don't think that I ever made a conscious choice. I was vegetarian sometimes, like during college. There wasn't much food on the campus that, and so I ate veggie burgers that for sure had like the garden burger that has cheese in it. And I went through different phases, but I was always plant-based. I never ate meat, and I still don't eat meat. I'm 46 years old. I still have never eaten meat. I
I
don't,
didn't know that.
no, I still don't eat meat. And so I don't know that I made a conscious choice. It doesn't resonate with me as food because I never ate it as food. So I'm giving my kids the choice at a much younger age than my parents gave me the choice. And they're very connected to like what it is to harvest an animal. They've watched that happen. And some of them are into eating meat and some of them are not. And that's their choice. That's their choice to make and not my choice to make. I'm giving them all the tools to know. And they understand, even the ones that don't eat meat, if they will go say goodbye to an animal and pray and thank it for its nourishment for the rest of the family. Or so I don't I don't have, so I don't know that I made that choice consciously. I know I got a, I've never been very didactic. I used to say that I belong to a cult that I never signed up for. And that's kind of a joke, but I was never, you're a murderer if you beat me. I was always that if you're going to, I was always kind of like, if you're going to eat meat, it's much better to do that. That if you're willing to fish or you're willing to hunt, I always believed that. And so there's been, and my dad was vegetarian and then pescatarian most of my childhood. So he would take my brother fishing sometimes, and I had a neighbor that we lived in a cold area, and so sometimes deer would get hit by a car, and it would be cold outside. And frozen snow, and this neighbor would come and collect up these deer and then give out the meat. And so I remember, calling Chad and waiting for him to come get this deer because someone hit it. So although I was raised vegetarian and in a vegetarian family, it was never like the hunter is the murderer or the farmer is a murderer. I never lived in that paradigm. And that's a paradigm I don't actually resonate with, and I haven't ever, really understood, because I've always understood that there will be people that will eat meat and that we want to have options that are the most humane and the best for those people, but not that like everybody, the idea that like everybody that eats meat is a murderer or that they're a zombie or, these things that people are saying to me right now. I don't identify with ever feeling that way. I mean, my husband until very recently was not allowed to cook meat in the house or in the same pans that I eat out of. And so this, I was like, people say, oh, I was a liar, I was on a trend or whatever. I'm 46 years old, I've never eaten meat. Like, it's a really long trend. And even if tomorrow I decide that I'm gonna go on a bone broth cleanse or whatever, it would not be that I jumped on a trend to make money. This has been my life for all of this time. And I'm less, I would say now I'm less like, oh my God, did that, was there any lard in that bean? Like, I don't want to eat. I'm less like that. I let my husband cook meat in the house that he worked so hard for. Like, that was crazy that I made him cook meat outside. But that was really how I was. And so, anyway, so that person that built, even when we had the farm, built back to the question, how did I get to here? I went to the farm. We built the little outdoor kitchen right next to the house so my husband could cook his bacon and not make my house smell bad. And I believed that we would have this death-free zone. So I want to first say that my husband is still eating meat. So he's going somewhere and buying meat that shows up and goes into the freezer in some sort of plastic tray or whatever, and he eats it. So this whole time that I'm in the fantasy of, you know how it meat comes in like a styrofoam or whatever, and that, so this meat is coming packaged and gets put in the freezer, and I have disconnect, cognitive dissonance, like that my husband eats meat, but there's not going to be any death on my farm. My farm is going to be a vegan regenerative farm, and we need a cow. And so we look at adopting an older cow, and it seems like a little dangerous. And so my dad has this young cow that's from his genetics on his farm, and he gives it to us, Una, and she's good with kids and all that. So we get Una for her poop, and Una's pooping. We got some sheep. They're going to be going along in the orchards and regenerating the soil. And we got some ducks because we have so many snails, and the ducks are making babies. They're sitting on their eggs. They're making babies. We're not killing anybody. It's just so beautiful. It's like nature, and we're just loving it. And then we heard about these other ducks that would be better for the snails, and they're khaki Campbell. So I order some khaki Campbell ducks. I raise them up on the porch. We have a little swimming pool, kiddie pool. I'm just like loving these little ducks. The kids are petting them all the time. And they get big enough. They're teenagers. They're big enough to go into the orchard, and it's this beautiful overcast day, and it's drizzling, and there's tall, beautiful grass and the snails. And I let them go into the avocado orchard with the other ducks, and they're so happy, and they waddle into the grass. And I go off to my vegan restaurant, and I think I'm making a difference. I'm doing all the right things, and these ducks are going to eat those snails, and nature is going to win. And my husband calls me, and he says, "You're going to be super upset what I'm about to tell you, but I need you to just breathe. It's not the end of the world. Nobody's dead. No, I mean, no people are dead, nothing like that. Just sit down or go away from other employees because you're going to be upset." And I'm like, "What? I think my dog got hit by a car. I don't know what's going on." So I go in the other room, and he's like, "All your baby ducks are dead." And they're not babies anymore. They're big, full-size teenage ducks. I say, "What do you mean they're dead?" And he said, "They all got raped to death by all the drakes, boy ducks." And I say, "What?" And he said, "You can't, it's too many boys. Like, you don't want us to cull any boys. You don't want there to be any death on your farm. So 50% of ducks that are born are boys. But in nature, nobody lets that happen. The boy ducks get pushed off and pushed out and pushed away. And then eventually they get eaten by coyotes or other things. They do not let there be equal amounts of males and females. It just does not happen. And so because that, they just mated them and mated them and mated them over and over because they were so excited about these 19 new female ducks that they killed all 19 of them. And I was upset. I was crying. I just said, taking care of these ducks. I'm a vegan. My mindset is like every animal is so important, and it's a sentient being, it's a God expressing in the world. And I still believe that. But what I realize is that nature has a divine intelligence and is far more brutal than anything that humans do to animals. Nature is crazy brutal. The boys would just be dead. They'd be dead. They'd be food for something else. Coyotes need to eat, everybody. But because they were in this captivity situation where they were laying eggs and I was just feeding them, there was none of that instinctual to push anybody out, or where are they going to push them out? They're in a fenced-in orchard. And the next day I said, "Somebody needs to do something about those ducks." And my husband's like, "I just want to be clear, what you're saying is that you want me to harvest the ducks." And I start crying, and I'm like, "No, I don't. I really don't, but I don't know what else to do. I can't just have girl ducks." And there had been three other girl ducks that had been raped to death. And I had been like, "Well, I mean, this is, must have just got, they got too excited. Let's put some of the boy ducks over with the roosters." And like, I was playing some kind of like trying to have it be okay. And I had the whisper was those other ducks. And then I just let all 19 of my brand new baby ducks. Harvested the drakes. And it was a lot, it was like 22 drakes. And I had just let it keep going. I was not doing anything about it. And I didn't tell anybody. I didn't, it was like happened in secret. Like I was like, I don't want ever talk about this again. I don't want to see them. I don't want them showing up in any freezer in the farm, like give them away. I don't want to know anything about. I was just heartbroken. And I was heartbroken everywhere. My whole, everything I believed in the world was being kind of pushed up against, like that. So was I supposed to fix ducks so they couldn't have babies? Was I supposed to, I like, what was I supposed to, how was I, you know, was I supposed to only have girl ducks, but then what happens to the boy ducks? Like, how was I supposed to do this? And if we're not going to spray chemicals, then we need something to eat the snails and the snails, like we need to create. And I just, so I just kept going in the inquiry, and I'm breastfeeding a child. I'm always breastfeeding a child, and I'm feeding my older children oat milk from Costco, organic. And I'm looking at my breast, and I'm looking at the cow who had had a baby that my dad gave me, and we're milking off the cow because the baby's only breastfeeding on two quadrants. And the way we've bred cows now, they make much more milk than can feed just one baby. And we're milking off this milk, and then we're like giving it away. We're dropping it in the gutter. I don't know. We're doing all this stuff. And I'm looking at my breasts, and I'm like, if my breasts are making this liquid gold that has all the immunity of this whole area right here for my baby, who's an infant, my toddler could be drinking that milk, which I also believe has all the immunity for this area, for even a dirtier area of this area, like the, like they're in the barn. So more. And I start to think it's crazy to drink oat milk when I could be drinking raw milk from my own cow, which I know what they're eating. And I don't want dairy because I don't want abuse, but is there abuse? There's no abuse here. And the calf is already getting theirs and all the reasons, you know, it's not your milk. They took the baby wasn't allowed to be, you know, all those things. We're not relevant in this situation. So I start feeding my kids raw milk. And then the neighbor's dogs kill my entire flock of sheep in one night, get into the pen, inside, and don't eat a single bite, not one single bite. And I'm devastated. And my husband like jumps into action, and two of them are past ability to salvage the meat, and two are still alive, and he has to kill them. And then, cause they're like ripped out and guts ripped out, but still alive, terrible, terrible suffering. And my husband is just gets the tractor, hanging them up, call people. We don't have freezer space. You got to call people to come get meat. And I'm shell shocked, and my sheep are dead. And I start calling people, and all the white people are like, oh no, we don't eat meat with trauma in it. And I'm a vegan, so I'm like, I think there's trauma in all meat. Like they have to go in a truck and they get loaded into the truck, and then they get to a place that smells like death, and then they have to wait and then get bolted in their head. Like I think there's trauma in all meat. Like I don't know who thinks there's no trauma in the meat, but there's definitely trauma in all the meat. And so this idea that this meat had trauma that they were not going to eat, whatever. But all the Latino community showed up in force with, and we just were giving away 5-gallon buckets to all the people in Fillmore around the farm. And people still come and say, oh my God, thank you. That was awesome. I still have some of your meat, or we made it for this party, or, you know, we had barbacoa for this thing. And I remember thinking that was a better way to honor them than just throwing them into the compost pile. And throwing them into the compost pile would have been microbes, and there is no waste in nature. Mm-hmm. And so that when you're operating in a system that everything can go back to the earth, there is no waste. Nothing is ever wasted. But I still thought that was a better way, to go about it. And
At this time, were you starting to question sort of the vegan mindset, the culture around the sort of like wanting like super special snowflake meat that had never experienced a negative emotion? Like, was it kind of unraveling your worldview around that whole paradigm?
yes, and yes, in 2019, late 2019, I started to think we should open a regenerative restaurant. And maybe going into 2020. But late 2019, early 2020, I had multiple offers on my restaurant in the millions and millions and millions of dollars. And we were going to sell the whole brand. And I had a 6-year deal to just do the food and like run it out across the whole country. And I thought, I should not do this right now. I should just open a regenerative restaurant later. Let me do this. Let me get security for my family. And then we'll do a regenerative restaurant later. And then I even started thinking about getting during the pandemic. So then that whole deal fell apart, 20 something million dollars, because the pandemic disappeared and those restaurants have now just been closed and I got nothing but debt to show for them. So that, thanks to people being afraid. So that happened. And then we started to think during the pandemic, well, maybe we should move into some bigger spaces because all these big spaces were coming up available across in places that had less regulations and were letting people eat inside, but they were still having, because it's like 50, no matter where you live, it's Texas, or 50% of people were like scared. So if you were scared, and even people that maybe didn't, maybe more than 50% of people were scared. And so people were just afraid. And so it didn't matter. And so there was big locations available. So then we started to think, well, let's open a Sage Vegan Bistro, like back to back with these big spaces, divide the kitchen and do a 2,500 square foot Sage Vegan Bistro, and then do this Mexican Oaxacan concept that, my husband was the face of. And we would do these things back to back, and we'd have one rent and one, and there was shared costs associated, insurance, blah, blah, blah. And it occurs as two businesses to the outside world, but ultimately it's one business. One insurance, one payroll, one like these things. But it's just the pandemic just kept going. And it was like there was no way to think about trying to do a new business. And then I started closing restaurants. And so to answer your question, yes, my paradigm started to shift. I was also, people say, oh, you're just selling the meat right now for the money. The truth is, I stayed vegan for the money. If we want to be really, 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 really like authentic, when I wanted to add meat, it was like, it's not the right time. We're scaling up. We're gonna sell, blah, 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 da, 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 all that. And then I still thought for a fair amount of time, okay, well, we're going to get past this and then we're going to get back into some deal where we're going to sell the whole thing. And we went through the whole, we spent, it's significant money to get one of these deals done and go through all the, with the, the vetting and the debt. I mean, we were $120,000 cash into this deal on our end for getting paperwork ready and lawyers and getting all the paperwork for franchising and paying the firm that's selling you and all that stuff. So it didn't make sense at that time to integrate regenerative. And then, I was also tiptoeing. So my original thought was maybe we just add like regenerative eggs and, and we still be a vegetarian restaurant. But then basically we're at the teetering after the pandemic. I mean, LA, they closed us down for 2.5 years, basically. A few months, they let people dine inside in 2.5 years. And so people are still wearing masks right now today. If you go to my restaurant, other restaurants, people are still wearing masks.
I was just in California and it was my first time back since 2019. And I was like, what dimension is this that everyone is masked up? This is bizarre.
It is bizarre. So I had closed Culver City, closed Agoura Hills, and then I'm coming to the end of like, okay, am I just going to close these last two stores? And I have some investors in mad, like upset and saying, like, you're just moving to Texas, you're just like abandoning. And I'm thinking, abandoning? I've been pivoting for 3 years and nothing is working. I haven't been paid in 2 years. I've sold my house, my car, my RV, tractors, all types of things just to live because I'm not being paid by my job. And so my experience is not that I'm abandoning. And every time we can't make payroll, it's me coming up with it. So it's a little bit hard for me to see that that's how it's being interpreted. But I'm contemplating here, like, do I just throw in the towel? And I was this close to just throw in the towel. And I thought, and then this person actually said, I think you should do the regenerative thing that you were going to do before. And they said that they were going to fund it. They were like, we'll put up some money so you have some cushion and all of that. And then, so I started doing all the research and getting the meat and all the stuff. And then they basically backed out and was like, well, we're here for you for emotional support, whatever you need. And I was like, I don't need you for emotional support. But okay, thanks. So, but I was like, you know what? Let's just try. And the worst thing that happens is a bunch of people talk about regenerative agriculture and it gets way more into the zeitgeist. And the worst thing, that's the worst thing that happens. And we close anyway. And the best thing that happens is it works and we get another 10 years out of this beautiful restaurant that I've put so much energy into, and the investors and everybody has a win. And so I throw my hat over the wall, but essentially we have no money. We have no cushion right now. So it's just every payday is a disaster and like scraping it together. And we're just like really trying. And people are coming in and people are excited and people are supporting, but a lot of people are also upset and not coming in and not supporting. So it's kind of, we have to ride this wave. And right now we're on the downside of the wave where new people are coming in, but we've like lost the old customer base. And to see how, and it works or it doesn't work. It will be a sad victory for the vegans, though. Like, literally, is this, you're sitting here protesting and throwing blood. If you put me out of the restaurant, out of business, like 70% vegan restaurant, all regenerative meat, all regenerative flour, all local, hyper local produce, no seed oils. I mean, what's the win? Who's winning? Because another restaurant, because believe me, another restaurant's going to move in there and they're going to be frying like Alaskan king crab or whatever, you know, it's not going to be some regenerative nothing.
Of course. So, I mean, I've never quite understood the chip on those who self-identify as vegans on that shoulder. Because even when I was, vegan for decades, like, I don't care if other people eat meat. It just wasn't my thing. So I'm wondering, like, what you attribute that to, and is that, like, is the backlash louder than the excitement? Where are you at with that right now?
The backlash is much louder than the excitement. And so I need people that are in the carnivore community, in the no seed oils community, in the whole food community, in the I don't want pesticides in my food, in the I'm cool on Roundup community. I need all those people to come out in mass and support. And everybody always says, like, I want a restaurant where I know that everything is like has integrity. And I'm providing that. And I thought people were going to just show up in droves. Like, I'm so excited I can get tallow fries. I'm so excited that I can get a kale salad. I'm so excited. Like, whatever people wanted, that I had the whole food version for you local, supporting American farmers, supporting local California farmers, and giving people that high quality whole food that they want. I have always been, it's not really, people are saying I've abandoned my ethics. My ethics have actually always been for whole foods, less chemicals or no chemicals, and less harm for animals and farm worker advocation. So I'm actually like in the same place I was. I found a video on Instagram, it has like 100 and something views because it's from a long time ago, where I said, somebody, if you ask Molly, it was like an Ask Molly series that we did, and it was someone asked, do you think it's more important that your kids stay away from animal products or Roundup? And I was like, Roundup, like 100,000% Roundup. So I think I'm actually pretty much, that's 8 years ago or 7 years ago that I said that. I'm still having the same ethics that I've always had. It's just that people put their ethics onto me.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I do that sometimes. Someone will tell me like, oh, I didn't get the vaccine. And then I assume, and I'm like, oh my God, did you hear blah, blah, blah? And they're like, oh, that's a little down the rabbit hole, isn't it? And I'm like, oh, I just made up that you were down the rabbit hole because you didn't get the vaccine. But, and they're like, oh no, I didn't trust it. Oh, okay. But you know what I mean? So we make these assumptions. So I think people made the assumption with me that I was vegan for life. And so I must be what people call an ethical vegan, which I think is a weird term, because we all have our ethics that we are beholden to in ourselves. And there's not like one person's ethics that are more valid than someone else's. And the idea that we can just stop death by stopping eating meat is an illusion. And I actually think that's what people are most upset about. If you get the girl who makes her husband cook meat outside in a separate kitchen and has never eaten meat in 46 years to say, the cow is the greatest technology for carbon sequestration, also the greatest technology for turning sunlight and grass into high quality calories, that's earth shattering. I was part of the church. And I'm now saying I'm cool with this religion. I'm still going to pray. I'm still that. But I also think that this religion over here has a whole lot of value. That's kind of what it's like. And vegan, they've had the supremacy of my diet is the one to save the planet. So if you don't eat meat, you're a better person because you don't kill animals, and you're a better person because you're causing less harm. And regenerative agriculture disrupts that entire conversation. No, you're not better, and there is not less death. And so if you think that, then you've been misled by the agenda that wants us eating food that comes from factories filled with chemicals, highly processed foods. I don't eat anything that I can't cook in my kitchen. I never have eaten any, like, it's not just for today or tomorrow. You never saw any meat Beyond or Impossible or any of those. You never saw Just Egg. You never saw any of those things at my restaurant.
No, because you were serving real food. It's so disheartening to, I didn't realize that this was the response. And I find it odd that the like vegan devotion to life, but to be so cruel and dehumanizing to their fellow human beings. You know, it's, I mean, like, where is the attunement to how you're treating other people and how you're judging and projecting your own values onto other people without knowing anything about them or what their bodies need?
They don't believe anybody needs. But I mean, someone just texted me right before this thing and said, I bet you can't wait to get my pet rooster onto a rotisserie. And I was literally thinking, like, what a weird thing to say. Like, why do I want your pet rooster who you love and have a relationship with? I'm a vegetarian. I don't think about anybody's, like, I can't wait to get these chickens onto a rotisserie. Like, not something I ever think in my life. And your pet that you have a relationship with. My cows all have names. Una, that we talked about, I still have her. Like, I love my animals. I breastfed a goat. True story. Her name is Bonita. I still have her. She was a late term miscarriage, and her brother were eyes were it was so windy, and their eyes were stuck open from the wind, and their tongue stuck outside and like with dirt to its mouth and nose like totally dry, and they were dying. They had no teeth. They were super early premature. And I'm out in the field, and there was nothing around that we could do anything, like nothing sterile. They just came out of the birth. They have no immune system, literally no immune system. And if I just use the water from the tank or the whatever, they're gonna die for sure. And I don't know what to do. And it's far to the house. I take off my shirt and I only have my bra on. And I realize I only have my bra on, and I'm wiping all the stuff off of them with my shirt. And they're so dry, their mouth, their eyes, and I'm like, they're dying and they're choking. Their tongue is stuck outside of the mouth. And so I just pull out my boob and start squeezing my milk into their mouths. And the brother died, but Bonita, we still have her. She just had her first baby this year. And she's totally doing great. And her mother the following year also had a late term miscarriage, and we saved the one of the two babies. And then people were like, you should get rid of her. She's not good at reproducing. And of course, my vegan mind was like, well, people, we got to be good at, it's not just, you're not good at reproducing, so we're getting rid of you. And this year, she only had one baby and she breastfed it, and it wasn't a late term. And so I think, I'm still that person. Like, Bonita's mother lived because I wasn't willing to just harvest her because she couldn't have babies. And now she's with the new owners of the farm in California, and her name is Chi Chi. And she just had a baby girl this year, just one instead of two. And she totally bonded and everything. And the farm workers sent me pictures, and they were like, look, she's breastfeeding. It didn't happen again. Because I had been texting them, like, you got to keep eyes on her because you know how she always has the babies too early, and you're gonna have to bottle feed them. But so I say all that to say it, I love my animals profoundly. And I set out to do this in a vegan way. And I realized that veganism, there's no, it doesn't exist in nature. It's not a real thing. And so, and if we think that seed oils, I guess that we can't have these two things coexist. So if we think seed oils are bad and that they're causing massive inflammation, which I got a major download when I was pregnant, all of a sudden I just couldn't basically eat at Sage because I couldn't eat Earth Balance. I couldn't eat the rice bran oil. I was having a visceral morning sickness feeling to any fake seed oils. But if we, so I'm going to listen to my body. I quit smoking the same, like I was young, much younger, and I had a miscarriage, but I was pregnant only for a couple of weeks, and I always joke that it was the baby that had me stop smoking. And I didn't, before I even knew I was pregnant, I went and I was like, oh, I don't ever want that again. And I quit smoking just like that, like as a 23-year-old or whatever. So I believe that when you're pregnant, your body is more heightened to what is okay and not okay, because it's on heightened alert. And I couldn't do the seed oils anymore. So my question is, if you don't do seed oils, how do you get enough fat for the whole planet? So you can't have both paradigms. Like, oh, someone will say, I'm a whole food. I only believe in whole foods, and I'm a vegan, and I'm an ethical vegan, and I don't eat fake meats, and I only believe in whole foods. Great. It's great for you. We don't actually have a way to feed the entire planet all of their fat resources from avocado, olives, and I don't know what else people would say is non-seed oils, coconut.
Coconut.
We don't have the resources. And it's not, where do avocados grow? Where do coconuts grow? Cows grow anywhere that there's grass.
Yeah.
And they've evolved with humans. And people say, well, for us to commoditize and blah, 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 blah. Yeah. But do you know what your wild counterpart broccoli looks like? I'm telling you, it's like the it's looks like a mustard flower. It's this big. Like people say, oh, well, cows aren't a real thing. It's their wild counterpart, bison or. Well, broccoli is not a real thing. Are you going to stop eating broccoli? Cabbage didn't used to make that nice head that can store for inevitable amounts of. These are things that we selectively bred over time for us. Does it mean it's not of God or it's not of nature? No, I when people say, oh, all these fruits and vegetables are hybrid, we shouldn't eat any hybridized. I'm like, oh, you lost me here. That's us saying, oh, I mean, this happened to me. We grew some wheat. One whole field didn't come up. One whole field was a drought year. One whole field did. The one that didn't come up didn't get enough, got less than 2 inches of rain. The other field only got 2.25 inches of rain. I've been saving that seed, like, oh my God, this is wheat seeds that can grow in 2.5 inches. And I mixed it with other Sonora wheat and then we planted it here so we could get more of that genetic. I mean, we all do that. That does not mean it's not part of nature. That's us being the keystone species, part of nature, co-creating with the creator, which is what we're here to do.
It seems to me, like, as I'm hearing you speak, that like we're desperately in need of education. And it just sounds like people don't understand the food supply on any level or how it works. And there's such a disconnect. And
Or
you're
the
at
food web, or the basic nature of the food web. Because people will say, well, we're going to have to use all this more land to do regenerative agriculture. Well, first of all, my cows are in a field right now, and there's oaks, and there's dung beetles, and there's rabbits, and there's squirrels. And if you go to a field of kale in California along the 5 freeway, nothing is growing in that field, maybe a little bit of microbiology. But there's no, nothing is growing in that field. Where my cows are, there's deer, there's everything is still there. And the cows are getting moved every day. And if anything, there's some protection for the other wildlife over there because there's a guardian dog guarding the cows. But it's not, there's so much life available through holistic planned grazing. And so it's not just what I say. I got fact checked by these people because I said one family of four could eat off of a cow for a year as their meat source, and it would only be one death. And I was actually talking about eating less chicken, but they have said that would only be 500 calories a day for each person in the family, and that's not enough calories. Okay, so yes, if they only ate the cow and nothing else, my point was more that if you eat a chicken every day, a sentient being, a chicken could feed a family of four, that a sentient being is dying every single day for the protein source. And if, but beyond that, why I am so amazed with cows and bison and, is that they're also creating that environment and making that environment better for more life to thrive. So their life is a sacrifice, but all this other life comes out of that relationship when we're doing it in the mimicry of nature.
That does it for the first half of my conversation with Molly Engelhart. As you are inspired to check out the second half of our juicy conversation, you can find that on both my Locals and Patreon communities, which are dannycats.locals.com and patreon.com/dannycats. At both of these communities, for as little as $5 a month, that's less than a bag of organic cherries, you get access to all of my second half conversations, my post-show throwdowns. You get advance notice on live events, new book releases, new courses, new webinars. You get special discounts, oodles of bonus content. It is so well worth your investment. investment. So join one or both of those communities, and I will see you over there for the second half of my conversation with Miss Molly Engelhart. I'm also reminding you to sign up for my newsletter at DannyKatz.com. It's the very best way for us to stay in touch, regardless of what sort of big tech censorship shenanigans may not be happening out there in clown world. All right, that does it. Thanks so much for tuning in. Thank you for remembering that every word matters, that you are omniscopic amazingness. I'll see you on the Locals and the Patreon for the second half. Have a rockin' day.